Congratulations, you have found the Lambcast, the official podcast of the Large Association of Movie Blogs, also known as the LAMB. The LAMB is the largest collective of online movie blogs and podcasts with 2,000 members and counting. Every week on the Lambcast, various members of the LAMB community get together to talk about our favorite subject, movies. So bookmark the LAMB and follow us on social media. Be sure to join us each week to hear a lively discussion of films and movie-related talk from our members. Join the flock at largeassmovieblogs.com.
I bid you welcome to the Haunted Podcast. I'm your host, your ghost host, Richard Kirkham, and I'll be leading you through this special Lambcast haunting for the next few hours of what remains of your life. It is Halloween week, and we want to swim in a selection of scary movies to put us in the right spirit. This is episode 709 of the Lambcast, and we hope it will not be your last. As we gather at this seance to summon the films we most want to talk about, we'll metaphorically join hands, close our eyes, and open ourselves to the voices from the other side. Sitting at the table with their fingers on the planchette, waiting to ask their questions of the dead and argue with the living, are several spiritual mediums, a physical medium or two, a skeptic, and of course a final girl just to cover all the bases. Let's meet them now. Dave Anderson has a basket of free kittens to pass out. For some reason, all of them seem to be black, but I'm not sure you could get them down your throat. Meow, Dave.
How you doing?
Doing good. Nicole Ayers has gone mad, and she posts about it using a spirit board. And if you spell it wrong, she will haunt you down. Greetings from the beyond, Nicole.
Greetings. Time to go bump in the night.
There, in the corner, is it an orb, an ectomist, a demon, or a poltergeist? Nope, it's the Vern, once again haunting us with his out-of-body suggestions.
I love you. I love all of you. I love you. I love all of you.
I know. Sorry, genre crossing here.
I love it.
Finally, she crawls out from the debris left by a cannibal family to join us between the scares for this episode, the Lambcast's own final girl, Lisa Leahy.
Hello, how are you? I'm very glad to be here.
According to Wikipedia, horror films have existed for more than a century. Early inspirations from before the development of film include folklore, religious beliefs, and superstitions of different cultures and the gothic and horror literature of authors such as Edgar Allan Poe, Bram Stoker, and Mary Shelley. From origins in silent films and German expressionism, horror only became a codified genre after the release of Dracula in 1931. Many subgenres emerged in subsequent decades, including body horror, comedy horror, slasher films, splatter films, supernatural horror, and psychological horror. The genre has been produced worldwide, varying in content and style between the regions. Horror is particularly prominent in the cinema of Japan, Korea, Italy, and Thailand, among other countries. Each of our guests was assigned a homework assignment to bring a film from five different subgenres to talk about. My friends, let's talk about those subgenres. We're going to hear about slasher films. So if you are Jason or Michael Myers, you might get a chance to be heard on today's Lambcast. Supernatural films, we're looking for poltergeists, spooks, and all kinds of hauntings. Creature features, if you've got animals gone wild, if there's something in the wilderness that's reaching out to get you, that's the category that it fits in. Comedy horror, most horror features laughs at some point, but some feature laughs as the point. And monster movies, everybody loves a good monster, even if they are kaiju. Of course, movies cross genres all the time, so if your slasher is also comedic, you could put it in either category. We'll talk. All right, my friends, to quote from one of those scary movies, what's your favorite scary movie? So let's hear your favorite slasher movie, or whatever slasher movie you wanted to talk about today.
So I decided that I wanted to go with Your Next, which is a 2011 chaotic dinner party. And it's funny that you mentioned that some of these genres can cross. And this is a film that I laughed myself silly through, and I was just absolutely delighted by it. So this is a film where you've got a larger family, well, not too large, but, you know, slightly larger than normal, a big, beautiful house out in the middle of the woods. And they're getting together for their wedding anniversary party, get the whole family together. And it turns out that, you know, a group of people have decided they're going to take them out one by one. And there's just such crazy kills in this film. Especially my favorite that involves kind of clotheslining somebody. And it's great because if you don't pay attention to films, you forget this thing is there. I, being a nerd and a half, went, uh-oh, this is Chekhov's, you know, clothesline. We're going to get this later on. And so it's just one of those films where you've got people in masks, you've got home invasion, you've kind of got everything that's been done before, but there's something about the way the family kind of turn against each other. You get some of the little quibbles that happen within families. Who doesn't like whose spouse? And then just the chaos that ensues as this group of people try to take them out. So that is my nominee for slasher for this particular episode.
I love this pitch, Lisa. This is a fun movie. And
so fun.
When I went into this, you're expecting a normal home invasion movie. And it just totally has too many twists and turns. It's fun. It's really interesting how Adam Wingard went from doing this to directing Godzilla vs. Kong. Also recommend his other movie, The Guest, is a good one, too.
Absolutely. So. And you have to throw a shout-out to Ty West playing one of the characters, Tariq, in this film.
Oh, that's right. The guy who was in this, and Barbara Crampton's in this. Yeah.
Yes. Totally. There's a lot of fun names in here and a lot of little 6 degrees that you can play with this particular one.
What year did this movie come out?
2011.
Yep.
All right. Well, that's one I haven't seen. I've heard of it, but I'm looking forward to it now. It sounds
very
like
worth your time.
It sounds like it's right up my alley, a little bit of horror and then some humor to go with it.
Definitely.
I like
and this. Some good comedy. See, that's a category I struggle with. We'll talk about that later. But
yeah.
This is the kind of, like, you know, tense comic relief kind of comedy.
I like your phrase, Chekhov's clothesline.
Yes, I'm a big fan of Chekhov and his guns, so I like to talk about that in films.
And this is 2013.
I've got 2011 by IMDb.
You're 2011? Oh, is it? Okay, why am I doing 2013 on Google search? Okay, maybe you're probably right.
Well, if there's another one that's named Your Next, I don't want to get confused.
You're right, it's 2011. Okay. I don't know why I saw 2013. My bad.
All right. Well, we'll save the dyslexic for down the road here. Dave, we're going to have you next. What's the slasher film that you brought for us this week?
Okay, I'm going to go way back. And the slasher, it's not my favorite genre, subgenre. There's a lot more that I don't like than ones that I do. To me, this is, along with Halloween, the best example of the genre, and that's Deep Red from 1975.
Very nice.
Directed by Dario Argento. I didn't always think that way. This is how old I am. I first brought it home from a video store, and I thought it totally sucked. It had bad dubbing, choppy editing, and little of the style that made his later film Suspiria so, you know, weird-ass fun. But what I didn't know at the time is I saw this severely edited, truncated, full-screen English version. And over 20 minutes have been shaved from the original length. And then
sometimes that matters.
Yeah. And a few years ago, I had the opportunity to review a remastered Blu-ray, the original Italian cut. And the first time I'd seen the film in 30 years. And I was blown away. I think it's probably Dario Argento's best film. It's the most visually interesting slasher movie I've ever seen. And even the murder sequences, as cruel as they are kind of beautiful in a way, the way they're shot. And one thing I didn't realize from watching the original cut is this movie is often very funny on purpose. A lot of what was cut from the English release was the relationship between the two main characters, and their interplay is often really funny. And it's a nice contrast to the more intense sequences. It's still, like typical Argento, it's mostly style over substance or logic. But I think it remains the best giallo film from Italy. And this was back when Dario Argento could do no wrong. I'm not sure what's happened to him since over the years, but this is one of the great ones.
I love this pick. I personally prefer Tenebrae over Deep Red, but I do not fault on this pick at all. The score is amazing. I even find the casting of David Hemmings and Daria Nicolodi, Dario's Argento's girlfriend at the time, to be a lot of fun. A lot of great visuals in this. It's a very solid murder mystery movie.
And I'm assuming, Dave, that you were recommending the remastered Blu-ray and not the 1980s VHS release.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Yes.
Vern, it's yes. Your turn.
Okay, so my pick is, I believe, if I look at the year here, wait, which does not tell me, on my wonderful Blu-ray that I'm holding here from Arrow Video, I am picking The Stylist from director Jill Gavar-Gizien and starring Najara Townsend. And this is a very different type of slasher movie. We have this young girl named Claire who works as a hairstylist, but she doesn't like her appearance. She doesn't like the way she is. And what she does is she likes to meet someone, cut off their scalps, and wear it on her head so that she can feel like this other person just for a little bit. And she becomes friends with this other girl played by Beth Grant, and she thinks she's starting to make a dear friend, and then things turn. It's a very kind of fun psychological thriller that gets you into the mind of a killer. I kind of compared Claire in this to be like Leatherface, and you get to see the inside of Leatherface and why they're doing all these horrible things, or even like Norman Bates type of character. But she's sympathetic. She's like the very first like sympathetic slasher where you feel kind of bad for her in a weird way. But really enjoy The Stylist. It's got great cinematography and great acting. So very impressed, and I like to share it every chance I get. I believe that The Stylist is playing on Shudder, and I think you can also find it on Tubi. At least it was back a while ago. I'm not quite sure if it's still on there or not. But pick up the Blu-ray. It always got this really great Blu-ray that has like commentary tracks, and it even comes with a soundtrack CD. So that's kind of a cool thing, and a nice booklet, and there's like tons of special features on there.
That's a good choice. I also reviewed it for my site, and it's like you, it's one I recommend to people who've never heard of it, and a lot of people haven't heard of this one. But yeah, it's, I think I compared it to William Lustig's Maniac.
Only, oh yes, good point. I think about that.
Far less exploitative and misogynist, but yeah, it's an obscure gem. I love that movie.
And shameless plug, I did interview both the director and star of this movie for a Cinema Recall podcast. So check those out when you can.
Send me the link. I'll put it in the notes.
Yeah, it is in fact on Shudder. It is not on Tubi, but it's a very reasonable rental. It's like $2, maybe $3.
Is this an English language film?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't want people to confuse it with The Hairdresser's Husband, you know, and accidentally.
Sure.
All right. Well, good deal. Nicole, are you a slasher film fan?
I am, sort of. which we will start to understand as we go through this list. But I do prefer slashers more than like supernatural movies. But yeah.
Well,
I say give them to me.
Excellent. So which one are you going to give to us?
One that you probably have seen, and some of you either like it or don't. A lot of the movies, if not all, on my list are very well-known, I think, movies that I've grown up watching. So my list is entirely focused on horror films. It's my nostalgic coming-to-age list, if you will, comprised of films that I've watched and enjoyed from childhood to early adulthood, particularly because I'm not – horror is not like my most favorite genre. I tend to shy away from it. And so it's very rare that I'll watch a horror unless there's someone that I know that wants to watch it, or I like the trailer or the premise or an actor that's in it. So with that, my first selection for the slasher genre is Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master from 1988. It is it's a movie. I looked at this list and tried to think of movies that immediately come to mind when I think of the genre. And when I think of the slasher genre, Freddy Krueger comes to mind, probably because he's my favorite horror movie villain. I have a post on my blog in 2011, I think, where I mentioned Freddy on my list of horror movie bad guys. During a weekly meme with Dell from Smurfing the Web, he picked that genre. So this is a common, for those that have been around on my blog over the years, or if you know me, you know that Freddy is like my favorite horror movie villain. I love Jason, love Michael Myers, but Freddy Krueger, that is my buddy. He's your friendly neighborhood killer. And that is why I like him, because he makes horror movies easier to watch. I don't like being scared. And growing up, I actually used to bribe a relative of mine as a kid to like sleep in my room if I saw like a horror movie. I'd say, you know, like you can borrow my CDs if you if you sleep on the floor. And so I do want to give a shout out to Wes Craven as well. I wrote a post about him in 2015 for Day of the Dead, the year that he passed away, where I mentioned the Lamb and the Lamb cast. And in that post, I just highlighted how I think between Nightmare on Elm Street and the Scream franchises, the horror genre for me was a little easier to digest thanks to Wes Craven.
And I'm kind of curious, Nicole, why number four? Of all of them.
Why is four
your favorites?
When I think of the franchise, that is one of the Dream Master in particular. It's one of the films that I remember the most. And I don't know if it's because I am someone who has very vivid dreams. Like I can tell you about a dream that I have. My mom gets, she tells me not to eat late, but like I can probably tell you exactly, you know, what happened. It might sound like a plot to a movie. And I think that it's real. So it could be because of that. It could also be because of the pizza scene. Pizza is one of my favorite. Pizza is one of my favorite foods, and so I could eat it all day. And that whole soul pizza thing, while it's gross, like you know, that could be the reason why. And then I also don't like bugs, much like the woman, the character Debbie in the film, who works out. When I think of that franchise, I can replay that scene in my head a lot when she's like in the gym working out, and Sinead O'Connor's song Put It On Me is playing in the scene. I just remembered that, like, Put Your Hands On Me. That scene doesn't really, you know, it goes in a certain direction.
Yeah.
But I remember that song and that scene, and I don't like bugs. And so I love Freddy Krueger. And that is just one of the movies that I can always like I can see it in my mind right now, like I can, as I'm describing it.
Nice.
So I've watched it quite a few times over the years, and it just never gets old to me. And so, but I love them all because I love Freddy. He is he's awesome because he's funny to me. And so I just love it. So that's my pick, slasher, The Dream Master.
I know I'm in the minority on this, but I liked Freddy Krueger a lot more when he talked less.
Fair enough. Okay. I can see that.
The first one I thought was legitimately scary. The more they made him into a comedian, doing punchlines after every death, it started to remind me of why The Shining was never that scary. With, the character spending more time trying to spout memorable lines than being this enigmatic otherworldly demon. But that's me. I know it's a popular franchise. I just think it peaked with the first one.
Yeah, I mean, that first one is really pretty terrifying when you go back to it. And it's interesting because Freddy is also my favorite of those, very iconic horror demon creature things. And I've been very fortunate to get to interview Robert Englund a number of times for Rhode Island Comic Con. Oh, he is the most delightful individual you will ever encounter at one of these meet and greets. He always has a line that goes on for days, but that's because he will talk to every single person as if they were the only person in his line.
Oh, that's beautiful.
He's exactly what you hope for.
And it's perfect when you're talking to him, but it's not so great when you're 42nd in line.
Well, you know what, though? I mean, I think he makes it worth the time that you wait for him.
You hope.
You know, you don't want somebody who's just scribbling something and sending you on your way for $70. You know, like, you want somebody who's going to actually talk to you.
Yeah.
So. I just think he's absolutely divine. So I don't know. It's funny to talk about those films. And as you get into these sequels, you know they're not going to be any good. So you start making them funny to kind of make them somewhat entertaining, I guess.
Nice.
So, Nicole, I guess Freddy's your boyfriend now.
Well, yeah, it was tough. You know, for today, he can be. Michael Jackson has always been my boyfriend. But Freddy... Freddy, I look at him as my, my homie, like my buddy, and I love him. And I think it is probably because of the unpopular element in that franchise, like his funny one-liners and his remarks made it easier for me to withstand the horror, watching a scary movie as someone who doesn't like to be scared. I will say I'm a city girl. I'm from North Philly. I live in the hood. Like, I don't need, I already have enough.
You know what? That's what my husband says, because my husband has lived in a couple of haunted places. He's the same way as you are. He's like, I've seen
the world's
enough.
Creepy enough. I don't need to pretend.
Yeah, I only need to just go out of the house, but I do appreciate really hard, really scary movies. Just for me, it made it like Freddy just made it like, oh, okay, yeah, he is here to kill you. But it's going to go down easy, or at least it might be a little adventure. And it's funny, now that I think about it, to Vern's question, one of the other reasons I like Dream Master 4 is because I can remember some of the lines. Although I don't know if Welcome to Primetime, Bitch, was in this particular one.
That's number three. Yeah.
The one of Suck Face. When he was in the classroom with the girl who had asthma, Sheila, I think, in this movie. I remember that, certain lines that he says, and it's just always easy for me to get down. So
definitely,
yay, Freddy.
Well, I've added a couple of collections in the last month trying to catch up on things. I've only seen maybe the first two or three Friday the 13th movies. I've only seen the original Nightmare on Elm Street, so I've picked up some collections so I can catch up on things. I have all of those bad lines to look forward to, and the comedy apparently is going to be featured strongly in episodes 2 through 12 or however many of these they made.
Yes.
Well, I'm affected by the primacy recency effect. I'm going with something that I know from early on in my experience, and it's also the one that I've seen most recently. Nobody will be surprised at this one. I think everybody has probably seen it. We talked about it. It was Movie of the Month last October, and I think it's just one of the best horror films ever made, despite the fact that it was initially dismissed, and that's the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yes.
I don't know that I would say that's dismissed at all. Somebody was saying to me at school that they were watching like a
Cop
Scares. I mean, that one is all over it.
Nowadays, I think it has a huge amount of appreciation. But in 1974, when it came out, it was not.
Oh, I see.
It was not the film that people either expected or wanted or appreciated. It did great business. Don't get me wrong there. You know, it had its fans, but it was very limited to the kind of drive-in circuit. My memory is that it's the same people who did who ended up distributing Deep Throat that distributed Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So basically the mob, you know. So they made money, but you know, nobody at the time thought of it as being art. And the first thing that I heard about it, the first time I heard about the movie, it was on a TV station that had a local TV critic. I can't remember his name, damn it. But he showed clips of Leatherface chasing, who is it, Susie? Not Susie.
Is it Franklin?
No, the girl, the final girl. I should get it. I should know this just off the top of my head, but I don't. Shame on me. Sally. It was an S. I was close. So I get a half a point on that. Chasing her around in the woods, and he showed the, you know, like 30 seconds worth of clips, and he mocked it the whole time, and just suggested that it was not good. And so I didn't see it in 1974 because I thought, well, it's not good. And when I finally did see it, I thought, what the hell? This is when I need to stop listening to other people about their opinions on movies. Boy, was I surprised how much I liked it. But it wasn't until I saw it 5 years ago again that I realized this is a really well-made film. In addition to being scary as heck and atmospheric like you can't believe, it's put together really nicely. There are some great shots in this movie. It's edited really tightly. I like the whole 70s milieu where you sometimes have no idea what the hell is going on, and that's part of the fright, and I like that quite a bit. And this movie just has everything. And despite the fact that it's about chainsaw murders, it's not nearly as bloody as people might think.
Not
exactly.
At
all. You know? Yeah. Yep. With it, probably kind of cut away from a lot of the gore, a lot implied, too. I think just the title alone, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you know, puts into your head all these horrific things that are going to happen. I remember the first time I ever heard about this movie, Richard, was when watching the movie Summer School with Mark Hart. Where Chainsaw and Dave are showing clips of the movie. And I totally forget the line.
Said, I got to go to Blockbuster right now.
Or they're like, something like we're like showing a movie about incidents with power tools or something like that. Because I think a teacher walks in and Mark Hartman's like, oh, I'm sorry, we're showing my kids a student film about the bad things with chainsaws or something like that. But yeah, love Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I prefer number two more as my favorite of the franchise, but I will never dismiss about the first one.
Yeah, Toby Hooper. He was thinking he was going to get a PG rating for that movie.
Yes.
And this is what makes that, you know, the movie really pretty powerful. And yeah, it's virtually bloodless, but what's implied is just so unnerving that, you know, you don't have to show someone something to be really thoroughly creeped out.
Absolutely.
It plays like a documentary, almost like a snuff film.
They set up the atmosphere at the beginning of the film with all the grave robbing backstory and a couple of images that are grotesque without being particularly bloody. And then you've just got that whole thing hanging over your head for 40 minutes before any of the mayhem really begins.
And I do highly recommend the 4K Steelbook that Dark Sky Films just put out last year. of this film. It's got a ton of bonus features, both new and old. Because to me, the story behind this film is just as interesting as the movie. Also comes with a mini poster. It's a good pickup.
Oh, nice. You know, packaging. That's what always sells me on this kind of crap.
Yeah. Well, the packaging for this one is first rate.
I'm going to break open my Fright Night package later on today and catch up
with
that.
Very nice.
And I'm, now I've got to go, damn, I got to get a 4K Texas Chainsaw Massacre from, what's the name of the company? Dark something?
Dark Sky Films.
Dark Sky Films. Okay, I'm going to look for that. They're going to get my money today. Thank you.
Nice.
All right, well, let's see if we've got any more commercials in the future here. Lisa, we're changing genres. It's supernatural time. You've got some spooks that you want to talk about or somebody being possessed?
Absolutely the most impossible choice you could give me. This is my wheelhouse. This is where I live. I don't want to watch anything else. I much prefer supernatural stuff. I think they're the most interesting, and there are so many possibilities. So I racked my brain a little bit, and I dipped into a subgenre you did not give us to look at, my second love, which is found footage. And I'm going to go with Gonjim Haunted Asylum for this one. We're going to go with a Asian subgenre. We're going to go with found footage and supernatural on this one.
Love it.
This is a brilliant 2018 found footage film. You've got this crew of, I don't know, 20-somethings probably, that have decided that they are going to go to an abandoned asylum for a live broadcast for their horror web show. And it's the same old setup where you have the idea of, you know, creepy haunted building, places where teenagers and 20-somethings don't belong. They get in there and of course they get trapped, but some of the scares in this particular film are well worth the price of admission. One in particular that made me almost fall off the couch. And I will tell you that jump scares do not do anything for me anymore. I barely even blink at this point. And for something to make me go, oh, hang on a minute, rewind that, pause that, what the hell was that? Amazing, amazing film. Just one of those fantastic found footage films, because a lot of people dismiss found footage as one of those, it's always the same, it's this and that. But this is one of those incredible, right under your skin, you're not going to sleep afterwards. So, Nicole, this one is not for you. Just one
and
of those.
And now I want to see it, though, the way you describe it.
Broad daylight, my love, broad daylight for this one, because it's going to get under your skin. This one is available on Shudder. You can get this one on Peacock. I think Tubi's got it. Roku's got it. You can actually rent it right now on Amazon and Apple TV for a big old 99 cents.
What's it called?
This is Gonjim Haunted Asylum. It's spelled G-O-N-J-I-A-M. You definitely need to check this one out, especially if you love found footage the way I do, because
I do,
some of the gems are few and far between.
Yes. Well, daytime, I got it.
This is a delightful found footage film.
All right, I'm going to keep this on my list. Thank you, Lisa.
Yes. I got you, Vern. I got you.
I don't hate found footage films. I haven't been a huge fan, although there are a couple that I have enjoyed quite a bit. The what's the damn J.J. Abrams one?
Cloverfield.
Yeah, the first time I saw Cloverfield, I really liked it, but it made me sick watching it because of all the camera movement and such. And
I was never so desperate for a pause button when I saw Cloverfield in the theater.
Yeah, because there's just a lot of movement, and so that's one of the reasons I've been a little bit hesitant about all of them. I did see Wreck not too long ago on
Amazing.
The big screen, and I liked it quite well. One of the things to do is make sure you sit at the back of the theater. That helps quite a bit.
Yes.
This sounds like a lot of fun. I'm glad we've got something different on the show. That's excellent.
I got you.
Dave, what have you got for your supernatural?
Okay. I'm sure some of you have seen this one. It's the only sequel on my list. I'm a huge fan of The Exorcist. That's not the movie I'm talking about, though. To me, that's
we'll
the
forgive
greatest.
You.
Oh, you're talking about Legion.
Yes.
I am talking about Legion.
Yep, Exorcist 3.
Exorcist 3, it pretends like the Exorcist 2 never happened, which is
what?
A
good choice.
So good movie, Exorcist 2. What?
I'm kidding. It gets my vote for one of the most underappreciated sequels ever made. I mean, it has a big cult following now, but to me, there are parts of this movie that are just as effective as anything in the first film. I enjoy George C. Scott's performance in that one quite a bit. You know, he takes the role of
Lee J. Cobb.
Kinderman. Kinderman. And it was great to see Jason Miller again. And what I like about this one is the writer and director, William Peter Blatty, who wrote the original and also wrote the novel Legion, he seemed to be going for a different tone than the original Exorcist.
Mm-hmm.
It is deliberately paced. To me, it's extremely atmospheric and less about demonic possession than it is a psychological thriller at times. In fact, he was forced to include an exorcism scene in the mm-hmm. film. But Shout Factory put out a really great version of this film a few years ago, and there's sort of a director's cut as a bonus feature with this, that's supposedly truer to Blatty's original vision. Having seen both, I still like the final cut, which is, like I said, atmospheric. It's violent, it's quirky. And one thing that really shocked me when I first saw this, it's surprisingly funny on purpose, especially the first 30 minutes. The dialogue between Kinderman and Father Dyer, to me, was just hilarious. This film also includes one of the greatest scares I've ever seen in a film.
Yep.
I'm with you, Lisa. I'm not, jump scares are neither here nor there unless they're used really sparingly at just the right time. And this one lulls you into a really false sense of security before really hitting you with one.
Absolutely.
And I just love that scene.
Good pick, David, too. I even like Brad Dourif's performance in this.
Doesn't matter what it is. Brad Dourif is going to make everything better.
That's true.
Well, he has that knack for chewing up scenery, and why not give him a part where he gets to just go to town?
I love him. This is such an interesting title because, you know, I've read both of Blatty's books. I've, you know, obviously have seen all of the Exorcist films, whichever prequel we're talking about, whichever sequel we're talking about. And I am all about Lee Cobb's version of Kinderman. I think in reading the novels, you definitely get Lee Cobb's voice. And I think George C. Scott has a tendency to choose some scenery. But he does a good enough job here. I think he does well. I think George C. Scott is George C. Scott on screen. And I just think that he does a wonderful job. And you're absolutely right. That banter that Kinderman is known for and the way Cobb put it on screen and the way Scott then brings it on screen has a lot to do with Blatty's writing of him.
Mm-hmm.
And you're absolutely right. Legion, the novel, is not about exorcisms. It is not about these haunting things. Yes, these terrible things are happening and you've got this awful killer doing these terrible things, but the book is really a lot more philosophical than it is horrifying.
I'm going to disagree with you there because I read Legion, the book, and it's mm-hmm. the only book that I ever read where the hair on the back of my neck stood up while I was reading the book. And I turned the lights on and said, yeah, I got to close this for a minute.
All right. See, I'm glad it worked for you.
Oh, it was really atmospheric. I saw the movie when it came out. I thought it was quite good. I don't think I've seen it since then.
Yeah, I watched it recently because I was guesting on another podcast looking at the prequels. And it's just sort of like it's such a quality film in and of itself. You're right. The film is very, very atmospheric.
And regarding the comedy, on the disc, William Peter Blatty, obviously it's an older interview because he's passed on. And I didn't know this until I saw this. He was primarily known for writing comedy before he wrote The Exorcist. After that,
John Goldfarb, Please Come Home.
Yes. A bunch of stuff. And after The Exorcist, no one wanted him to write any comedy.
after you hit the money aisle like that, my goodness.
Found a sweet spot, and they kept him there.
That's the truth.
Vern, something yes. supernatural, something spooky?
You know, I've had the same thing with Lisa. I had so many titles to choose from, and I really had a hard time picking movies here. And I was like dwindling down between two choices, and should I go with the popular one or maybe go with one that maybe has not been seen by many people? So I'm actually going to be picking Dario Argento's Phenomena.
Nice choice.
Starring Jennifer Connelly, and she plays a girl that's going to a Swiss Academy, and she has this unique ability to telepath with bugs. She's able to communicate with bugs telepathically. She teams up with an entomologist played by Donald Pleasance to solve a series of murders that are happening around the area. And I got the 4K Blu-ray from Synapse that has three versions of the movie: the Italian version, the longer one, the international cut, and Creepers version. Because I remember this came out in the 90s, known as Creepers. New Line Cinema bought the rights, and they took this 2-hour, like 12-minute movie and cut it down to like 93 minutes. But yeah, I like this movie. Very featured a very young Jennifer Connelly. She made this before she did Labyrinth. Yeah, just fun feature. There's even a monkey that's got psychological links with our lead character. Yeah, very, very fun flick.
Well, I can't say it bugs me that you picked it because I haven't seen it.
But it's streaming. It's on Shudder, and I believe it's on Tubi. I know for sure it's on Shudder. I think it's on Tubi, but Shudder has the international version, which is commonly known as like the version that combines.
Which version should I be looking for?
I think international is fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got Shudder. I got.
Plans. This is the best $6 you'll spend every month. I'll tell you.
Yeah.
It's a good investment.
I hear you. I'm going to have to get on Shudder because I forgot all about Shudder, and it was a time trying to binge all of the movies and some of my backup ideas on my list. I felt like I was going to get whiplash bouncing back and forth between websites and services trying to figure out what is available where. Netflix has this, but no, it doesn't have this other thing, and it's available. I have Prime, but Prime still wants me to rent this other thing, and it's like, damn, had I remembered Shudder, this probably could have solved all of my problems. And also, it reminded me that buying is always better. So much like the Blu-rays that Vern mentioned at the top of this episode, like, I want to start investing in some of my favorite horror movies just in case I want to get a good scare.
Get the physical media. Buying. Don't buy it on Amazon and just have the digital. Buy a physical copy. Save
it. That's what I have,
because it'll disappear someday and you'll say, what happened? I owned it. And Amazon will tell you, no, you don't really own it technically.
So Phenomena does have three cuts. The Italian version is 116 minutes. The international cut is like 110. And then the Creepers U.S. version is like 82 minutes. And the line I was saying earlier about I love you, I love all of you, that's from the movie where a bunch of kids are bullying Jennifer Connelly's character. And so she just calls out calmly, I love you, I love all of you. And all these buds come to her because she has this telepathic link with them. And she uses buds to solve murders. It's a great giallo mystery movie, too. And yes.
All right, so it's like Willard with bugs.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, I got you.
Yes.
Nicole, so what did you rewatch for your supernatural film?
Well, this one, I was unable to pull it up in time, but I remembered, I can still, again, remember the scene where I went. I don't know if it counts as a jump scare or not, but there's a kitchen scene in The Others that freaked me out. And that was my pick for the supernatural subgenre, only because I couldn't really. I don't think I've ever seen Poltergeist or The Haunting or many popular supernatural films. And The Sixth Sense to me seemed like a easy pick, but I didn't want to watch it again. And I'm like, no, I'll go with the others.
Brilliant film.
Yeah. Because I did not want to see this film. I've only seen it because my friend Shelby, who loves horror movies, fortunately or unfortunately for me, she wanted to watch it. And so I was visiting her and I went, okay, well, let's watch this. And the others freaked me out. But it was okay. Like, because I had company, she was hanging out, you know, with me. I was fine until there's there's like a kitchen scene, mm-hmm. where we both, her and I, now mind you, she, maybe Lisa, like you, watches a lot of horror. But in that scene, both of us went, oh, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
And I couldn't shake it. I couldn't shake it after.
This is such an amazing title.
Because it uses the even if you know about the twist, it doesn't affect your rewatchability of this movie. In fact, it makes it better. Sixth Sense, you can watch it maybe once or twice, and that's about it. The others...
Oh, I disagree there, but that's just me.
That's fair. But for me, I can watch the other more times, too, regardless of how I know the outcome.
I used to teach it to freshmen. I do a suspense unit, and it's a wonderful PG-13 atmospheric, get right under your skin suspense film, as well as being, you know, this supernatural horror film. And it's just wonderful because it gets, like you said, Nicole, it's the kind of thing that you're going to remember after you watch it. And the performances are just amazing. And it's just, you know, you've got these characters, you just have a scene where you look out a window and they're just kind of standing there, they're coming closer, and it just totally throws you off. And it's just absolutely amazingly made.
Yes. Much like Richard's experience reading the book for the Legion, mm-hmm. I imagine. My hair's raised, and I don't think they ever went down from the other.
Yes.
I don't think I've still shaken that movie after watching it.
So the others is your stylist.
It's still under my skin.
Yeah, Criterion just put out a 4K Blu-ray of this movie just recently with a bunch of great features that I'm curious to pick up. I still own it on VHS, so I don't know if I'll quite go that route just yet, but...
Really, people, this is not a sales pitch that we're doing here this week, but we got a lot of good stuff to talk about, and, you know, anytime you can get it in physical media, that's a good thing. Yeah, this is a great movie. I remember seeing it and I appreciated the twist. I think that there were, you know, once we got The Sixth Sense, I think there were like a whole bunch of movies that came out in the next couple of years where there is some twist in the story that comes along. And I think The Others was there before it started getting to be too obvious. And so I think it worked really well.
This movie is on my list of shame, meaning I should have seen it by now and haven't. So I appreciate you guys not spoiling it. Thank you.
Good.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome. Yeah,
you're welcome. All right, I'm going old school again. This is actually not even the oldest film on my list, but it is older than Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It came out the same year as The Exorcist. It has some of the same themes because it's got possession as part of the story. It's The Legend of Hell House. From 1973.
Absolutely brilliant choice.
I like this movie so much, and it was so creepy when I first saw it. I saw it at a drive-in theater, and I saw it with a friend of my father's. A guy, you know, I don't want to say he was a grown man. He was a grown man, but he was not as old as my father. He was only maybe 10 or 12 years older than me, and he took me to see, we liked movies. He was a movie buff. He worked as a stagehand in Hollywood, and he just loved movies, and my father hated the fact that we would go to the movies and see three or four movies in a day. And he took me to see this, and the line I remember the best, you know, most of the time it irritates me when people talk during a movie, but when the bedclothes pull back at one point, my friend Rusty said, "Ooh, she's going to get a Halloweenie."
Nice.
Nice. Very nice.
And I'm afraid that just imprinted on me, and I remember it so well. Roddy McDowall is in this movie, and he was around forever, and he's in my favorite 80s horror film, which I mentioned briefly before. I'm going to be watching later on this week, Fright Night. But here he plays it straight. He's a medium. It's another one of those. This is like The Haunting, only with blood and more sex.
Yeah.
It's hard to
another
go wrong
excellent
with
novel.
Yeah, it's Richard Matheson. Yeah.
Yep.
Excellent.
Brilliant book. One of my favorite haunted house books and movies.
Well, good deal. We're ready to move on to creature features, my friends. So if you've got Animals Gone Wild or Nature's After Us or some kind of freak that's going to scare us, it's time to talk about them. And Lisa, other than the four freaks on the show with you, who have you got?
Well, I'm going to keep with my found footage theme, and I'm going with The Descent from 2005, which is an incredible story about these young women who want to go spelunking through caves, and they become trapped. This is not for the claustrophobic at all.
Oh, no.
I'm going to tell you right now, I watched this film this last week. I was so freaking uncomfortable. Yep. That it was hard to believe. The horror stuff didn't bother me at all, but the cave crawling crap, I don't need that in my life. I don't understand why people do stuff like that. I look at that and I'm having nightmares right now while I'm wide awake in the middle of the day thinking about it. Sorry.
Yep.
I didn't
know. Absolutely. Hey, you're just plugging it for me. There's a movie called Buried, Richard, that you want to stay far away.
Yeah, I've heard. I don't think I can do that.
Written by a graduate from the high school I teach at, Buried. So I just threw in an extra
yes,
film
and,
for fun.
And I know, but anyway. I know you're not fucking Tomb Raider.
So anyway, with The Descent, it's just this, there was something about this film that it came out, and anyone who has seen it will tell you how fantastic it is. But it's not a film that shows up at the top of people's lists when they think about this kind of story where you're dealing with creatures or where you're dealing with a really effective get under your skin kind of film. And you're going to hear me say that 18 million more times before the end of this show, because those are the kind of films I really like. I like the atmospheric stuff. I like the stuff that stays with you after the fact. There are some incredible sequences dealing with light, dealing with shadow, dealing with gigantic pools of blood. There is a lovely homage to Apocalypse Now in this film, and the scene in Apocalypse Now that this kind of throws a nod to is one of my favorite sequences in all of film. So I had a nice little thrill getting to see it here. It's a film where you wonder if anybody's going to get out. And what I really like about it is the ending, because this is an ending that they're not going to placate you with some cheesy Deus Ex Machina. We're going to save everything and everything's going to be happy again. But I'm not going to actually tell you how it ends, because that wouldn't be fair.
And I believe there's like two endings too to this. There's like an alternate ending. And
yeah, but why watch it?
That's fair. I don't know, because I thought the ending that they did use, but not the one the director wanted. So,
yeah.
The one the director wanted is the one that Lisa's talking about.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. All right.
And this one is available, again, another very reasonable rental, but frankly, for an extra dollar, you can purchase a copy, a digital copy anyway. And this is available on Max right now. So anywhere you go looking for, your HBO Max, you can get your hands on The Descent for this week.
Yeah, it's a great film. It's on my top 10 list of the best horror films of the 21st century so far. Mm-hmm. Anyone listening?
And I'm not telling you guys anything about the creatures. You can find out for yourself.
And anybody listening, don't bother with the sequel.
No.
Okay.
I was thinking about that because I enjoyed this one so much. I thought,
nope.
Okay, well, I won't spoil it then.
Yeah, watch the European cut, no sequel.
Yes.
Dave, what's your creature feature?
Okay. Well, to me, the greatest creature feature is Jaws, but I'm not going there. And this one is found footage, which I'm not generally a fan of. To me, movies made in this style are hard for me to view objectively for two reasons. First, it's been run into the ground, especially in horror. And second, I automatically assume using found footage is more of an economic decision than a creative one. And for a lot of them, it seems like it's a lazy and distracting way to get things done cheaply. There's been some great ones. I like.
And there's me talking about how much I love it.
No, there's been some great ones. I liked Cloverfield, and there's this really weird British obscurity called The Borderlands. Mm-hmm. I think it was released here as Final Prayer. That's well worth your time just for the climax. But my favorite is The Bay,
yes.
Directed by Barry Levinson, of all people. It's timely, and it's disturbing, and it's really, really, really icky. And the way the narrative is structured, it's an effective use of found footage. And, you know, most of the film consists of footage by a rookie reporter and her cameraman who are in this small town on Chesapeake Bay doing a feature on the 4th of July. And people start vomiting blood and bleeding out, and it's obvious they're infected by something. And what they're infected by are these mutated isopods that have gotten into the water supply. And it's the result of a processing plant dumping chicken shit into the bay. Mm-hmm. The film's body horror elements are really unnerving because despite a premise that sounds pretty outrageous on paper, it presents the idea of being eaten alive from the inside out as something that's plausible. At times, it doesn't even feel like a horror story or science fiction, which to me makes it a little more disturbing. You know, it's basically a mockumentary. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's the obligatory cautionary environmental theme running through it, and some none too subtle commentary on authority figures of, you know, ignoring the problem until it's too late.
Yep.
The mayor in this one makes Mayor Vaughn and Jaws look like the pillar of intelligence.
Oh, nice.
that is an accurate description.
But it's a wonderful film. It's just creepy. It's gory. It's well acted by a cast of mostly unknowns. It's great stuff.
This is a spectacular choice. This is something we actually covered this for Between the Scares because this is a Blumhouse movie. And this ups the ick factor. If you saw Eli Roth's Cabin Fever and you never wanted to drink bottled water again, you're not going to want to drink any water ever again after this film. And just how, you know, gross this becomes. And, you know, Dave is right. This is a very gradual, you know, what's going on in a small town. Everybody very nosy about what's going on, but nobody actually worried about what's going on. And this is one of those films where it's really unnerving because you can see actual people, real life people today doing exactly what these people do, dismissing it. Oh, it's just those people. Oh, it's just this other thing. Oh, it's just a cold. And boom, it's too late.
And like
outstanding
Jaws,
choice.
It will make you think twice before going into the water.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I always have arguments with people about Jaws who call it a horror film, and I dispute that. It's not a horror film. It's an adventure film, a drama with horror elements, but let's not get into that discussion today. Vern, it's your turn. Tell us what creature you've got for us.
And I wanted to apologize to listeners because I realized my last choice of phenomenon wasn't quite a supernatural movie, so I can change that right now to Hasu, or House from 77. Quick synopsis, a bunch of girls go into a house run by one of the aunts, and really freaky shit happens. I love House, Hasu, try and watch it every year, so that's my pick for supernatural. For creature feature, it was the title that Richard mentioned earlier, and yes, I am actually going to do Willard, but I'm doing the remake, the 2002 remake with Crispin Glover as a meek guy, and it's picked on by everyone, especially his boss, played by R. Lee Ermey, and his mother, and he develops a friendship with a bunch of rats who he's able to control. Not telepathically, he's able to talk to them. They're his friends, and they kill people for him. And I've seen the original
version, and that's fun. But I think that the remake that was done by Glenn Morgan is a better version. Written by, screenplay by Glenn Morgan, produced by James Wan. I love the, I think it is 2002 remake of Willard, and I'm not quite sure if anyone here has seen it, but it's the best. I think one of Crispin Glover's best roles. It's this, Back to the Future, and of course his iconic role in Friday the 13th, the final chapter, and like the trinity of best Crispin Glover roles. Oh, and also I forgot his role in
Hot Tub Time Machine.
So much for the trinity.
I know, I know, right?
Have you ever seen Crispin Glover in Riverdale?
The documentary on this is actually kind of fascinating because they wanted this to be an R-rated movie, but the studios just had them do too many different changes. And there's actually a really cool commentary from Crispin Glover, Arlie Ermey, James Wan, and Glenn Morgan about the making of this. And it also features a very cool two-hour documentary about the problems they had with the studio system and the fact that the studio system put that on a DVD special feature is actually kind of commendable because the whole documentary, they're saying, hey, New Line ruined this movie. And the fact that New Line said, yeah, I'll put that on the disc is a great thing.
In regard to what Dave asked, I don't know if anybody else heard the question. River's Edge is a great performance from Crispin Glover.
I have not seen River's Edge, so I apologize.
Excellent movie.
I haven't
and
seen
he's also
either.
Wonderful in the first season of American Gods. He plays a character called Mr. World. And it's just there's one particular episode that takes place in a police station that includes Crispin Glover and Gillian Anderson, who plays a god called Media. And it's just the two of them together. It just gives you chills because it's such a spectacular episode for such a spectacular show and novel. I'm doing my English teacher nerding out thing. So all of the above.
Well, I'm going to dissent a little bit because I think I prefer the 1971 original with Bruce Davison and Ernest Borgnine because the rats always looked real instead of, you know, some of the stuff that they do in the 2002 version. But I think Crispin Glover was really good in the remake. So,
Davison is also so good, too.
Yeah.
His cover of Ben, Crispin Glover's cover of Ben by Michael Jackson is just magnifique. I prefer that over the original. Chef's kiss.
And Nicole's going to dismiss you now for talking down
That's
her boyfriend.
That's probably true. I'm sorry, Nicole.
I love you. I love you all.
I love you. Okay, thank you. I love you too.
Nicole, you got a creature feature for us?
Yes, I do, I think. And I think, and I say I think because I don't know if it qualifies as a horror. It seems to straddle the sci-fi and horror genre, at least from what I found. So in another edition of movies from my childhood, I skipped over Arachnophobia and the Gremlins to go with The Fly.
For me,
it's this movie is one that I watched growing up and continued to watch as an adult, starring Gina Davis, 1987, Jeff Goldblum, Gina Davis. It's like an example, a prime example of science going wrong and what happens when you take your experiments too far. But even though I don't like insects, I did enjoy this movie. And it does have some scenes that are kind of gross.
Kind of gross. It's understating things a bit, my friend.
I'm trying to be nice.
All right, I don't mean to correct you. It's one of those things I got to point out. It's 1986, and I know it's 1986 because of what happens. I took my wife to see this movie in August of 1986, and she delivered September 2nd of 1986. And there is a sequence in this movie. When this happened, she looked over at me and smacked me and said, "Why did you bring me to this?"
Exactly.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I have a daughter who's into horror. And one of the things I love doing is introducing to horror, you know, that I grew up with or, you know, classic ones. And I just this year, I finally decided to show her this one. And she only knows Jeff Goldblum from Jurassic Park. Mm. And so she was pretty icked out and blown away, especially by the sex scene. But yeah, it's held up really well over the years. It does not look like a product of its time.
David Cronenberg, man, just, yeah, great. Good job.
Yeah, no, this is a good film. It is creepy. I would definitely say it's a horror film, and I'd call it a creature feature for sure.
Yes, definitely.
Cool. I'm glad that it passed the test.
Oh, yeah.
You win. Victory there.
I heard rumors at one time he was planning on remaking it again.
No.
I don't know if...
No.
No, like I said, they're rumors. I'm not...
I don't think so.
Yeah. No, I mean, I hope they don't. Like, don't ruin a good thing, man. Like, just let it be.
I never saw the sequel. Did anybody see the sequel? Is it any good?
I've seen it.
I did.
It has its moments.
Yeah. It could be forgotten about, but it's okay. You're not going to miss
anything
if you see it or not.
If you're a dog lover, it'll fuck you up for life.
Oh, well, then yes. I'm going to skip it. I'll skip it. Well, my creature feature is a relatively recent film, and it's, Animals Gone Wild. It's, like I said, I think Jaws is not a horror film, but this one counts as a horror film. It's not a shark, though. It's alligators. It's Crawl. From,
yes, I thought about Crawl. This one.
From
good choice.
2019,
yeah,
which is a terrific film. We get a girl in jeopardy, trapped in a house with rising floodwaters. Her father is there, and he can't get out. And it's just, and there are alligators coming for him. And there are some great shots in the film with alligators attacking people in like the gas station across the street, and dismemberment occurs. It's why we get movies like The Meg, and why we get movies like Bait and all of those other shark movies. People want to see nature go wild on human beings, and we get that, but we also want human beings that we care for, and I think we've got a good relationship here, between the father and the daughter. She's a championship swimmer. They've got kind of a strained relationship, as this is true in every movie about fathers and daughters and mothers and daughters. If there's not a strain in the relationship, it's not going to be very interesting. But overcoming it, of course, is the big deal. And there's just a lot of nice tension that gets built up in that film. And I think it's really good. And by the way, there are a couple of jump scares, and they work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, they
great,
do.
Great pick, Richard. This is from director Alessandra Aje, and I never liked most of his films. He did High Tension and The Hills Have Eyes remake, and I wasn't a big fan of that. So when I saw that he was directing this one, I'm thinking, it's going to be schlocky and bad. But he does build the tension very well by introducing you to this woman and her father, and they made all the situations believable in this, which I was very impressed by.
He followed this up with another great film called Oxygen. That
I've never seen
Netflix.
That.
I liked it. It's one of those claustrophobic one setting films. To talk about the plot would be to ruin some of the surprises. But yeah, his recent films, starting with this one, have been really good. I think my favorite character though is Sugar the dog.
Yes.
If there's a dog, it's always going to be something that draws me in, unless it's bad news, in which case I don't want to see it. Fly 2 I can skip.
Yes, for sure.
Well, let's find stuff to laugh at, because horror movies often break the tension with a laugh, and some horror movies, their intention is just to make us laugh the whole time. Lisa, what do you laugh at when you see a horror movie? What horror movie do you want us to laugh at?
You don't want me to answer that. So the problem is, I'm not a comedy girl in general. The irony is that my favorite movie of all time is Ghostbusters, and it's a comedy, but it's also supernatural. So I don't know. I don't want deliberate, goofy comedy in my horror. So a lot of the choices some of you are going to give are probably things I don't want anything to do with. But I like when there's a smart, referential kind of comedy in a horror film. I prefer when the film is labeled horror first and then comedy. If it's comedy first, that you're going to turn me off. But something like, so for example, I always go to Scream versus Scary Movie. And I was actually excited to see Scary Movie because I'm like, this is finally going to be, you know, a contemporary parody that I'm going to enjoy. And I was so bored. I thought it was so dopey. Scream has intelligent references. You laugh because, you know, you get the joke kind of thing. And maybe that's elitist of me. Maybe that's too hipster of me. But I am who I am. What can I do? So therefore, the first film that came to mind for me when we talk about comedy horror is the brilliant Cabin in the Woods. Because
nice.
That's a good choice.
This is the film that's for me. This is the one where you have this smart turning on its head of all of those typical stereotypes that you get in films, all of the rules that you've gotten used to in horror films. This is the film that's going to play with them. There are too many moments to talk about that are absolutely spectacular. But, you know, you start off this movie with two girls, college girls, who are going off and they're getting ready to go off to the cabin in the woods. And, you know, you've got the meek kind of girl and you've got her friend who shows up and she's blonde. Well, she wasn't blonde before. And there's a shock to that. But her jock boyfriend shows up and he's like, wait a minute, who's this blonde? Where's my girlfriend? And while the meek girl is packing these, you know, giant psychology textbooks and things that she's going to study while she's there, the jock goes, what the hell is this? You don't need this. And he goes walking to the bookshelf and says, this is the book you should take instead. You know, it plays with this expectation, even though the film clearly devolves into those stereotypes in really clever ways. This is another one of those films where I was desperate for a pause button, because later on you have this absolute search and find it kind of screens, more than one instance, really, of can you spot the reference and how many of them can you come up with in 20 seconds? Because that's as much time as you're going to get to look at them. Outside of that, you have an added layer of the brilliant Richard Jenkins and Bradley Whitford playing these two office guys.
It's like Vincent and Jules from Pulp Fiction, only in a different context.
Absolutely. They are just one of my favorite scenes is when they're on the phone with a particular character and they're just goofing on him the whole time. I give away nothing, Vern. You know I break out in
hives. Okay, good. I know you don't like spoilers or the two.
I break out in hives.
I'd be careful not to give away too much about it.
I said nothing. Okay. I will say this is the only film in history where if you don't like it, it's because you don't get it, and that's okay. It's not for you then. Because I've had a lot of students say, this movie was dumb, this movie was boring, and I went, I'm sorry, but you didn't get it. Because this is definitely, they're not horror fans, and they haven't seen enough of them. And you know what? That's okay. It's not for everybody, the way many of the films you guys are about to bring up are not for me. But this film is just one of those perfect gifts to a horror nerd like me who struggles with the comedy. I just think this is so brilliant on so many ways. The casting, a couple of like little nods. It's just one reference after another. And so it's just wonderful for me. So that's my pick.
Yeah, it's a movie without punchlines.
Oh, you could argue the whole thing is a punchline, frankly.
Yeah,
but
that's true.
It's so wonderfully structured and so wonderfully put together. This is the kind of thing I like.
I wanted to love it so much more than I did. I enjoyed it. I thought it was clever. There are things about it that I would recommend to people. And you've mentioned Bradley Whitford and Richard Jenkins. That's my favorite element of the movie completely.
Mm-hmm.
With the one exception, you know, of the third element of the film that we, of course, are not going to talk about, which was also pretty damn awesome.
Loved it.
But it just, to me, I think the horror just ended up not feeling horrifying because of the way it was working, and I just didn't remember feeling it the way I know other people like you clearly embraced it. And I do think I get it. I just didn't think I enjoyed it as much. And
that's totally a thing.
I wanted to enjoy it more than I did. And maybe that's it. It's not that it's a bad movie. It's just that it's not as good as I had built up in my mind. Maybe that's my problem.
And that that's not your problem. But feeling is going to be how I feel about a lot of the titles you guys are going to bring up. Like, damn it, this should have worked for me, and it just doesn't.
Well, let's see how you feel about Dave's title.
Well, if nothing else, Cabin in the Woods is the greatest film to feature a unicorn.
Yes.
I'm in agreement with Lisa about horror comedy. It needs to be horror first.
I knew I liked you.
I've got little use for parodies. And I went way back for my choice. This is from 1971. It's the abominable Dr. Fibes, starring Vincent Price and Joseph Cotten. Price's Dr. Anton Fibes, his wife dies during surgery, and he himself gets in a car accident on the way to see her, and it's presumed he's dead. But he actually survived, and he reconstructed his own face and is able to speak through a machine he constructed without moving his mouth. And he vows revenge on everyone he feels responsible for his wife's death, and plans a series of grisly ways for them to die. Each mode of death related to the 10 plagues of Egypt. In a way, this could sort of be seen as a precursor to films like the Saw franchise, with elaborate death sequences and Fives' belief that those responsible deserve retribution. It's pretty violent for a PG-rated film, but it's also extremely funny, which makes the deaths also funny and a little less difficult to take. There's a definite tongue-in-cheek vibe to the whole film, and there's a lot of dry humor dialogue among the detectives investigating these murders. And the film is intentionally campy, both visually and Price's performance, including a lot of his over-the-top dialogue, a lot of its internal monologue.
Yeah, which he delivers without moving his mouth.
Without moving his mouth, yeah. He's basically acting with his eyes. And there's a lot of bizarre musical interludes in between where he's playing the organ in his weird Art Deco lair, and his beautiful assistant is dancing, and there's a mechanical robotic band behind him, you know, performing the music along with him. It's a strange movie, but it's very funny, both intentionally and unintentionally.
I watched it yesterday. and
good timing.
And the sequel. And
the sequel's okay, but
It was funny because we're watching it and my daughter looks at me and she says, "Did Vincent Price just make the same movie every year in the early 70s? And I'm going, "Yeah, that's pretty much it, because theater of blood, it's all that kind of,
but tongue
in cheek.
But he's in on the joke. That's what I
Yes. And you're right. The elaborate death scenes are the things that make it interesting and fun. And it was definitely a lot of fun. I enjoyed it quite well.
I don't think I ever saw this one. I apologize.
You're not going to get booted out of the island. Okay.
Well, if you have to apologize for films you haven't seen, let me see. I've got Your Next, Deep Red, The Stylist, Nightmare on Elm Street 4, Haunted Asylum, Phenomenon, The Bay, and I apologize for all of those. Okay.
It just gives you a list to refer to.
That's right. Well, Vern, what have you seen?
We're in the horror comedy genre now. So I am picking one that I really need to rewatch because I saw this back in the early 2000s and I thought, wow, this is actually a very kind of clever premise of a movie. So the movie's called Wasting Away, but when I saw it, it was called Ah, Zombies. And it's about a bunch of these characters who meet up at a bowling alley and they eat this ice cream that was contaminated by a nuclear research facility, and they become zombies. But in their minds, they're still humans. So all their interactions, they're seeing themselves as humans, but everyone else sees them as zombies. So they're trying to get help, but everything's too sped up for them. And so we come to them in the real world, there actually are zombies trying to eat brains. And they're not quite sure that they're zombies, which I found to be a very kind of clever premise of a movie about showing zombies from the zombies' perspective. And really cool movie. I do have no idea where this is streaming on. This is back in the
early days of the internet, I think I watched this on some sort of like free site, or someone sent me a link to review a while back, but I found this movie to be very clever. And I was also going to go with Peter Jackson's Dead Alive as another favorite horror comedy of mine. I could have easily done Sam Raimi's Evil Dead 2, but I just like the genre switch of zombies. And it's a very small...
What was the alternative title?
Wasting Away.
Wasting Away. All right, thank you, because I'm looking it up for you.
That's the actual real title of the movie, but it was also known as Zombies.
Tubi's got it, Vern.
Oh, you do? Nice.
Yep, Tubi, Pluto, and Vudu for free with ads.
You gotta say it the right way, I think. Zombies.
Oh, yeah. Or, zombies.
Yeah, there's no W there. I'm going to have to fight you on the aw.
Yeah.
I like that title better than Wasting Away. It's pretty straightforward. I love it.
Yeah.
Nicole, it's your turn to amuse us.
Well, I will. I think I have the ability to do that with my next edition of movies from my childhood. I'm going with the movie that is a horror from the slasher genre, but it's a comedy for me, and I appreciate it because it's a sequel, so it's a follow-up to an original horror movie. I'm going with Child's Play 2 from 1990, and nice. This is one of my favorites growing up. As some of you know, I love dolls. I still have most, if not all, of the dolls that I used to play with when I was a little girl. I still have them in my possession as an adult. And so the idea of a talking doll is something that I'm all over. And so for me, Child's Play 2 was really fun to watch. Now, I don't know. I think, Dave, you didn't like the talking Freddy when he talked. So Chucky talks more in Child's Play 2, but that's something that I appreciate because it makes it funny and less scary for me to watch. Poor little Andy in the film, unfortunately, his life is turned upside down because he's in foster care and his new foster family thinks that he's causing all sorts of trouble due to Chucky's antics. But I love Child's Play 2. I love Chucky. He's such a sarcastic little shit that makes that makes horror movies more tolerable for me to watch. So that's my pick for comedy horror, even though it is a horror. I know it's not a comedy, but because he has his smart remarks in Child's Play 2, he doesn't talk much, I don't think.
I love your pick of Child's Play 2, but I think he's more funny in Bride of Chucky.
That's my favorite. Chucky.
I need to see that one.
Yes, you do.
I still haven't seen Bride of Chucky in the franchise. I was really excited when it came out, and then I just put it on the back burner on my long to watch.
Oh, Nicole.
I want to see it.
It's so on Peacock delightful. Right now.
But wonderful film. You got it.
I'm going through all the Chucky movies because I started watching the series of Chucky. And then in the series of Chucky, they start introducing characters from the movies into the series. I'm like, holy shit. So I went back and watched all the movies. I just finished Cult of Chucky.
That's a great one.
Okay. Oh, they're all great.
But I mean, like, what's cool about it is, like, like most of these franchises in the 80s, they get to the point where they start getting silly and they're more comedic and they're scary. But Cult of Chucky actually started pulling back to some of the original feelings of Child's Play. But Bride of Chucky is such a gem. That's comedy to me. That's much more interesting to me. I think you will love that film.
Okay. Cool.
Well, my entry into this category is probably going to offend Dave and Lisa because it really is kind of a parody. It's a mashup kind of film. It fits in this category not only because it's a comedy, but it's a musical comedy horror film. And everybody who's listening today, you can get ready for this because it's also a Christmas film. It's Anna and the Apocalypse,
Oh, love this. I love this, Pete Richard. It's epic.
I love this movie because it is so silly, and it knows that it's silly, and it's a musical, and I love musicals, you know. I just think it's funny that they start breaking out in song. Some of the songs are hysterical, but it's also a zombie movie, and it's, you know, got the traditional zombie kinds of tropes in it. The zombies don't really start singing, but everybody else is singing while the zombies are around. And there is such an inappropriate Christmas song sung at a Christmas pageant at the high school. I have to laugh every time I think about it. It's just, it's so
Richard,
much fun.
I did an episode about my favorite Christmas songs for Cinema Recall, and I put that on my list of favorite Christmas songs of all time. So it's great. Inappropriate, totally, but it just works so well in that scene. And the other songs in this are actually good. In most, like, comedy musicals, the songs are not good. And so I was worried about that, but the songs in this are actually all
they're pretty good.
Fun.
It's pretty good. Yeah. It's like High School Musical meets Shaun of the Dead. And
yes,
I think it works pretty well.
Neither of those makes me want to watch this.
I see that's exactly what I was thinking.
Fair enough.
But totally fair. Hey, this is absolutely a genre for most people, just not for me.
All right. Well, we've cleared out that genre. Let's move to our final category where we're going to hear about monsters. It's time to. If you've got a werewolf movie in your back pocket, if you're looking for a creature from the Black Lagoon, if you've got some space alien who's hatching in your backyard, this is the time to bring them out. Lisa, what do you got for us?
So unfortunately, my title kind of got sniped a little earlier on, but I'm going to stick with it because I think Cloverfield is one of the greatest film experiences in a theater, not to mention trailer. That I have ever encountered in my days. I remember sitting at the drive-in to see Transformers in, you know, that July, however many years ago, and we saw yet again a found footage trailer come on the screen, and you've got these people at a party saying goodbye to their pal who's going to go off to Japan, and they hear this explosion. They see the lights go off. They flicker. They wonder what's going on. They hear some chaos outside. They go outside to the roof. They see explosions in the distance of New York skyline. They run down to the street, and the Statue of Liberty's head goes rolling by, and the trailer ends. You get no title. You get nothing. And this was in July, and I remember J.J. Abrams' people. These people earned their money, I'll tell you, because every time that trailer showed up online, they took it down. You were not going to find out anything about this movie until Abrams was ready for you to. And so we had to wait 5 or 6 months to even determine that it was coming out in January, what this thing was. And then seeing Cloverfield in the theater, I have never been so desperate for a pause button just to get to see things, because people are chaotic. People are panicked. Nobody is going to stand there and get the perfect shot of whatever this monster is seconds before it takes a bite out of your head. So you've got these people panicking and running, and it's just one of the most outstanding monster films that I can think of. There are these creepy spider things that come after you. There's this giant monster itself that's wreaking havoc out in the street. There's just so many amazing things happening and just the chaos that comes about. I love that you're not handed all of the information. I love ambiguity. I think it's just the best way to really mess with a viewer's head. I love when things aren't handed to you in a nice, neat little bowed package. And so this is a film, despite me thinking also of Crawl, I also went back into my childhood, Nicole, and I thought of a film called Wolfen, which is Wolfen is a great sort of werewolf type sort of movie that I used to watch when it would show up on TV in syndication. My mom used to watch these films and I used to sit there and get them. But I had to go with Cloverfield because I just think that it's the pinnacle of the way you should use teaser trailers and the way you should grab people's attention.
For a girl who doesn't watch trailers, I think this is pretty ironic.
This was before 2006.
I know.
So
yeah.
That's when I stopped. Oh, 2016 is when I stopped. The last movie I watched the trailers for was a thing called Rings and Good Gravy. But anyway, well, hey, I didn't know D'Onofrio was in that movie until I saw it. So at least I had one moment of levity. But yeah, I remember seeing it. And that's what you want from a trailer. You want something that makes you desperate to see it in
you
the film.
You could not do the sort of thing today. And so I'm
You can if you've got people taking it down every 5 seconds. That's for sure.
Yeah, you have to have a very committed team to do that. Yeah. Brilliant movie. I've seen it in theaters. It doesn't have quite the same effect on home video, but it can still work as well. But yeah, just great fun. I love the sequel, 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Oh, see, that's John Goodman.
10 Cloverfield Lane is my... is one of my favorite films. I just love that movie. Cloverfield was great. We talked about it earlier. You know, it was a little hard because it's found footage and there's a lot of shaky cam. And like I said, I got nauseous watching it. You know, subsequent viewings, you know, I think I've only seen it once since then. We're on the small screen at home, so that was okay. But 10 Cloverfield Lane, I could watch. As a matter of fact, if I mention it out loud, I have to watch it because it's one of my daughter's favorite movies.
Now we know what you're doing.
Yeah.
I might watch both of them again. So hell yeah.
I think the main thing I liked about Cloverfield, two things. First, I like the fact that the first 30 minutes are boring as hell because then when the shit goes down, it's like a sucker punch. You have no foreshadowing whatsoever. And the other thing I liked is these characters are mostly pretty stupid, but they're not stupidly written. I think they react in a way a lot of irrational people would react in that situation.
Totally.
And that made it cool. And like you said, Lisa, it doesn't explain everything. It does not. It's everything is from these people's point of view. They don't know anything about science.
Exactly.
Yeah, you
know,
exactly.
They just react.
Yep.
It almost reminds me of like watching like a Richard Linklater movie like Slacker or Dazed and Confused. Like, that's a hangout movie. And then gradually shit hits the fan and everything goes wild and crazy.
Dave, you got a monster for us?
Yeah, it's probably not a huge surprise. I chose John Carpenter's The Thing.
Great one.
And I'm not going to bore you with just, you know, explaining the movie or anything like that. A lot of people forget, though. I mean, it's you know, it's a classic now, but a lot of people forget it was a critical and commercial bomb when it came out.
It tainted John Carpenter's career for a while.
It lost John Carpenter the Firestarter director job. It's generally considered one of his best films. I'd go a step further and say he hasn't made a great one since.
Christine.
Nah, I wouldn't agree with you on that one.
Big Trouble in Little China.
Big Trouble in China.
There you go.
No, I hate that.
I forgot
that
about
one.
In the Mouth of Madness. I'm throwing that out there as another
Starman
option for monster.
Good, but not great. Anyway, you know, and there's been a lot of explanations for why that flopped in '82, and the most common one is that was overshadowed by E.T., which I think is bullshit.
Yeah, no, two different films.
The way I look at it, back then, hardly a week went by without another slasher movie being released aimed at high schoolers who were eager to see their own kind sliced and diced. And with a few classic exceptions, the most successful horror films back then featured young characters and simple plots and enough exposition to spoon feed, you know, even the biggest idiots in the theater everything they need to know. But The Thing had none of that. It had no masks, no sex, no women, no killer's backstory. It favored, you know, dread over jump scares. It was claustrophobic and unpredictable, relentlessly downbeat, almost nihilistic. And I mean, when we're watching this, we suspect everyone's doomed right from the get-go through no fault of their own. And then the movie has the audacity to end ambiguously, which to me is the greatest. That was the greatest ending to a horror film I've ever seen. And even thematically, to me, the notion of an alien consisting of individual free-acting cells with a built-in instinct to survive is a cool concept to wrap your brain around. And, you know, the film has a lot of whodunit elements similar to an Agatha Christie, you know, mystery, enhanced by the bleak setting. These characters are completely cut off from the world. And it's a smart movie that doesn't depend on their stupidity to advance the plot. Everyone makes logical survival decisions and develop reasonable ideas for how to detect and fight this thing. And the fact that none of it works kind of exacerbates the hopelessness of their struggle. This is another one of those films that transcends this decade. I think it's the greatest monster movie ever made. It definitely is more faithful to the original book. I think it's John Carpenter's best film.
And please,
and the special effects by Rob Bottin still hold up to this day too.
Awesome.
They're just absolutely amazing stuff. And the story by, and I'm gonna mess up the guy's name, Encarnio Mancino is just absolutely great. And I did not mind the 2011 remake with Mary Elizabeth Winstead, and I'll just shit for that too, but I actually didn't mind it.
It wasn't terrible, but, you know, they made the fatal decision to use CGI for the effects.
And I know they didn't want to do that too, but the studios kind of made the directors do that, so.
Please don't assume that my defense of subsequent John Carpenter films is a disagreement with your claim that this is the best John Carpenter film. This is clearly the best John Carpenter film. And once again, if you want to measure the impact of a movie by its commercial success, you're making a mistake. Measure it by its subsequent marketing. I think my daughter owns 20 T-shirts from the thing, and I own 5.
I have 2.
This is a great movie. I can watch it anytime, and it's like a lot of films that I have in my own life. If I find it in a theater within 50 miles, I go to see it. So. You know, there are just films that automatically I will be that way with. And The Thing and Lawrence of Arabia are two that come to mind immediately. If this movie is playing someplace, I go to a theater to see it.
Richard, you got to come to Minnesota sometimes, because over at the Parkway Theater, they played this movie in 35mm a few times, and it's amazing.
I saw a screening a few years ago at the Egyptian Theater, where they had a print, an original print, and the print was unfortunately fading because they were running it on, because it was I think it might have been a 70mm print. It was great to see it in that format, but the color, of course, was not holding up very well, and it was a little strange to view it that way. I don't want to say that I would, you know, direct people to see this on home video, but I do think that sometimes when they do the transfers and they're remastering the films, there's a reason they need to do the remastering. And in this particular case, that was what was going on there. And then the Morricone score is great.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry you had that experience happen in your screening, because the one in my screening looked very good. The colors were extremely great in our 35mm screening, so I don't know what kind of version they had, but it was actually a very good copy of that.
I think it plays great at home in the wintertime, and it's dark and snowing outside, and you're inside and warm and watching this.
I had, since you said plays great at home, I had a friend come over back in probably 83 or 84. He came over to the house during the day. My wife was working. I didn't work in the summer except for teaching a class in the morning, and the rest of the day I'd have off. And we didn't have air conditioning that worked worth a damn in this apartment that we lived in. And I said, come on over and we'll put on the thing and we'll cool down. Vern, what's your monster
movie? I
love
that. Monsters. All right. Well, I am going to go. I mean, I guess I can call this monsters, because in your list you mentioned, like, monster vampires and sea creatures and everything. I'm going to go with vampires as my monster, if that's cool.
Yeah.
Totally cool.
And I am going to pick From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yes, I was just defending this movie recently.
Good choice.
You know, this could also go in the horror comedy as well. We don't know the story. George Clooney and Quentin Tarantino, they're two criminals known as the Deco Brothers, and they're going to escape to Mexico. They take this family hostage, run by Harvey Keitel and Juliette Lewis and other people, and they stop over at the bar of the Titty Twister, where bad things show up. I can spoil it right now because it's vampires. Salma Hayek is one of the head vampires in this. Danny Trejo is in this as well. Cheech Marin, I love this movie. I love the blending of genres because it starts off as a very much a crime caper, which is like totally Tarantino's story right there with the two brothers. And then it's just more into Rodriguez's tone when the vampires show up there. But yeah, love this flick.
Such fun. Such fun. And like Tarantino and Clooney are hilarious in this thing.
Robert Rodriguez is one of my favorite indie film directors, and so this is a gem.
It's one of those switches of genres that works in it.
Yeah, you think you're watching Pulp Fiction, and the next thing you know, you're watching vampires.
And the way it kind of changes around, because you know what's happening. And it's abrupt, but abrupt in such a really great and clever way that draws you into it. And I think it's probably the scene where Salma Hayek is dancing and then the criminals come in, blood's being drawn, the way the creatures change. K and B did the effects for this, and it's actually really kind of brilliant. Go check out the episode from, a little plug here, Verbal Diorama. M from that did a whole nice history about the making of this movie. Very cool. And if you pick up the DVD, it has a documentary on there called Full Tilt Boogie, which is a documentary about the making of the movie. But what's brilliant, it's all about the crew members who make the movie, the people behind the scenes. It doesn't focus so much on the actors and the directors. It's about the crew members, about how they're shooting this and how they're getting along. It's all from their perspective, which I found to be an absolutely brilliant thing. The other actors are in there, but they're more of like side characters. The whole focus of the movie is for you to introduce yourself to the crew members who did this, for like the grips and the dolly people. And very brilliant documentary, Full Tilt Boogie. If you get the DVD from Dimension, it's like the special feature on there.
Nicole, do you have vampires on your list of monsters, or do you got something else for us?
I do have vampires on my list, which is a I guess fitting follow up to Verne's Dusk Till Dawn. Although I will say I probably favor Dusk Till Dawn more than my pick, but still, again, the year was 2009 in my early adulthood, out on my own for the first time, and thanks to my cousin's obsession with books about vampires that she talked about all the time growing up, she introduced me to a franchise that I continue to watch. So my third pick is Underworld: Rise of the Lycans, about a werewolf named Lucien, who's the first of a mixed breed of werewolves that can turn into human form, and they're known as Lycans. Well, Lucien was raised by this vampire king named Victor, who wants to breed a new species of Lycans to use them as slaves. But unfortunately, Lucien escapes and starts freeing other Lycans in a potential revolt against the system, if you will, that suppresses their werewolf powers. But there's also the matter of Lucien being romantically involved with Sonya, the daughter of Victor the Vampire King, who helped Lucien escape and betrays her like vampire duties in the name of love. So good old Daddy Victor, you know, wanting to maintain power and all, imprisons his daughter in an attempt to lure Lucien back into the insubordinate place where he belongs, according to, well, you know, vampire rule and all. So this prequel is my pick for the monster category. Although I will say I've seen the previous two films, Underworld and Underworld Evolution, as well. So I would pick either of them, even though I think they woke Victor up in the original one or something. Like the vampire king, he was hibernating, and then they woke him up, and now he's, you know, involved in a lot of chaos. So
this is quite the elaborate series, and I think I may have seen the first film in the series, but I don't think I've seen any of the subsequent ones. I know a lot of people, obviously a lot of people like them because they made several of them, and are they still making them?
I don't know. I didn't see the last one. I think there was one that came out in 2016, but after I went to see Underworld Awakening, the fourth one, in the theater, and I wasn't blown away, but it was something that, like, I wanted to go to the movies. A friend of mine, we were going out anyway, and maybe it's brand recognition, you know, kind of like politics. It's like, I heard of that. I know what it is. I know what to expect. So okay. I'm going to go with that thing because there isn't anything else that I want to see. And so I think the but I also used to mix this up with Resident Evil. I don't know how,
I can see how.
No, that's easy to figure out. You know, it's the actresses and the lead, and, you know, seem like they're interchangeable sometimes.
Yeah, and so, but that the Underworld Awakening was the last one that I saw. That next one after that, it went into oblivion for me. But it is a movie that I would still watch. Either of the first three, or Awakening, I would probably have one in the background. But Bill Nighy, you know, I think he did a good job playing Victor, the vampire elder in this series. So I would watch any of the three anytime.
I need to watch this franchise because I was a big fan of Kate Beckinsale after watching The Last Days of Disco, and seeing her in a different type of movie just kind of intrigues me. But I don't know why, I just haven't watched it. But I will give it a watch sometime this week.
Oh, well, I would love to know what you think, Vern, after you see it. The action for me kept me watching it more than the horror elements, since I don't like to be scared. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed this whole vampire versus werewolf / human uprising situation.
Nice.
All right. Well, we're going to close out our discussion of spooky horror films with my monster movie, and it's going to be the oldest movie on the list, I can see. It features the best performance by an actor who doesn't appear on screen until the last 30 seconds of a movie ever. It's Claude Rains as the Invisible Man from 1933.
Ooh. Oh, okay.
You know, most people think of monster movies, you know, you think of vampires and werewolves and Frankenstein's monster. Well, The Invisible Man was kind of in that category also, and he is a human monster. He basically goes mad because of the power that he thinks he's going to get from being invisible, and of course the formula that he's used has affected his mind. This movie has also got a huge number of laughs in it. It's not, you know, it's not a parody laughs, but they're just the kinds of moments that you think, yes, that's exactly the kind of humor that we should have. A little touch here to take the edge off of what we've got here. You know, I think we'll start with a Reign of Terror, you know, and we'll just murder a big man every once in a while, and we'll make it work. It's a great film. You know, it's creaky, of course. It's just the way things work sometimes, because you've got you know, old school filmmaking, and we're trying to create an invisible man without the technology that we have these days. But it I think it works really well. And have you guys seen this movie?
I've seen.
Oh, no, I haven't. I have not seen it.
That just came out recently, but I have not seen this version.
All right, but so, you reminded me of Hollow Man when you mentioned.
Yeah, it's,
oh yeah, that's a nod to this one, definitely.
With Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, that's a nod back to this one.
All those films descend from this, and there were a whole series of them. And Vincent Price, I think, does the Invisible Man in Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago on the movie mm-hmm. of the month. He's only in it for 20 seconds, but he never gets to be on screen. He's just invisible. But like I said, Claude Rains is in this movie, and he's regularly performing, but we never see him except, you know, in the form of bandages and sunglasses. It's one of those things.
still manages to be great in it.
Oh, he's fantastic. And he's got such a great voice, and he is such a terrific actor. And like I said, he doesn't appear on screen in his own persona until the last 30 seconds of the movie. And at that point, he doesn't have any more lines. So, but
yeah, and the reboot that will reboot the remake that Lee Winnell put together in 2020 was, I mean, totally different tone, yeah, different kind of thing. But oh, is that a good film too?
It was a good film. It was a good film. And we were talking about John Carpenter before, and I know he dislikes this particular movie, and I understand why. I should say,
he's allowed to be wrong.
I understand who he dislikes the movie for. The Chevy Chase Memoirs of an Invisible Man. I watched that in the last couple of weeks, and it is.
I hated that movie.
It is better than I thought it was. You know, yeah, my memory of it was not very positive, but as I watched it, I said, "This is actually not too bad, not too bad." It's an action film, but it does have that Chevy Chase-ness to it. So if you are not a fan of his, you wouldn't enjoy it. But everybody should be a fan of Claude Rains. That's just all there is to it. If you don't like Definitely. Claude Rains, there's something wrong with you.
Absolutely.
And if you don't know Claude Rains, you have somebody to look forward to meeting, because he's a terrific actor. All right, well, that's our show so far. You know, we're not done with the show yet, because we're going to take a quick break and come back for the exit question. But, you know, there are certain rules that you have to abide by in order to successfully survive a horror movie podcast. For instance, number one, you can never have sex. That's hard to do on a podcast. You know, sex equals death. Number two, you can never drink or do drugs. That's the sin factor. It's a sin, and it's an extension of number one. And number three, never, ever, under any circumstances, say, "I'll be right back." We'll be right back after a few words from a fellow Podcasting Network show.
Come. It is time to keep your appointment with the Wicker Man.
In 1973, a film was released which helped to codify the trappings of the folk horror genre. Now, 50 years later, join me, Tony Cogan, and different guests each week as we dissect the 1973 cult horror classic, The Wicker Man. We'll go through the film one scene at a time and look into the different ways in which the film has been influential over the past few years, the lingering parts of the music, the production of the film, and examine what led to The Wicker Man enduring for so long. So join me from the 1st of May each week to discuss the film, and to everyone listening, come. It is time to keep your appointment with the Wicker Man podcast.
We're back, which is a different franchise entirely. You know, we're not
going to
be talking
about
that. You know, we didn't get any Poltergeist discussion here, but that's okay. We've got a different question to finish off the show this week, and it's inspired by the films that we've been talking about here. Is there a particular horror film or genre that you're unwilling to watch, and why do you feel that way? And Nicole, I know that you sometimes get spooked out by the films, so maybe you're the good one to start with here. How about you? Have you got a genre or a film that you just say, "I'm not going there"?
Genre, no. But film, yes. So I've been very reluctant to watch any films from the Evil Dead or Saw franchises, solely based on the fact that a lot of the trailers that I see from those movies have freaked me out. And just for example, with Evil Dead, I remember one of the sequels for that franchise came out earlier this year, Evil Dead Dead Rise. I was in the theater I went to see another movie when the trailer for that movie came on, and it freaked me out. And I was just like, oh, yeah. And the thing is, in the beginning, I was a little curious. I was like, well, maybe I'll check it out. But then when the trailer was over, I was like, you see, this is why I don't watch Evil Dead movies.
But so, Evil Dead is actually really funny, especially the second and third
Not
movie.
The new ones.
Not the new
the
ones.
The original stuff, not the new ones.
Evil Dead Rise and the remake Evil Dead.
She's talking about the new stuff with Evil Dead 2013 and Evil Dead Rise, which came out earlier this year, which are a lot more brutal in nature.
Yes, so that's the one.
He's not talking about Sam Raimi's stuff.
Oh, okay. My apologies. Okay.
Yeah, so I'm just... So those are movies that I haven't wanted to watch. The newer Evil Dead
one. Hey, it's completely understandable. And there's a reason to watch trailers now, Lisa. Because you have to screen and filter what you're willing to invest in. And how do you do that if you don't know? And if you look at this and you say, that's freaking me out, and it's just the two-minute trailer.
Exactly.
Imagine what an hour and 40-minute movie is going to do to you.
Well, I can give you a couple of examples, especially recent examples, where the trailer is far scarier than the movie itself.
But like the one this last week.
You got it. but that's a different topic of conversation. But I'm a horror fan. I'm going to go see the movie because it's not going to freak me out. But in this case, definitely. You need to see what it is to make sure you're not putting yourself in an uncomfortable situation.
Well, speaking of uncomfortable situations, Lisa, I don't know. Is there a horror film or genre that you're unwilling to watch and why?
Yeah, I'm no good with anything that fewer than two legs and more than four. So I'm not watching Phenomenon. I'm not doing it. I'm not going to look at that.
Oh, you're not? Okay.
Don't need the creepy
crawlers.
You're
not a fan of Arachnophobia?
I've seen it. I'm fine with it. That one's less of an issue for me for whatever reason, although I saw it years ago. I haven't revisited it. I remember there was a movie, there was an Ashley Judd movie called Bug, and I'm not even going to bother. Because
they don't show any bugs in that
at all.
No, well, they do not.
Well, don't confuse with the 1975 version Bug, because that's all full of bugs.
I left that movie alone because I looked at it and went, okay, these are about two people who think they have like bugs under their skins, and I was convinced at some point we would have a first person point of view of what they thought they saw. So it's nice to know they don't actually do it, but
From William Friedkin.
Oh, yeah. I know what it is. I just don't want to see it.
Really done. I've seen the play by Tracy Letts, because Tracy Letts wrote the screenplay. Sure. I saw the play version of it. Yeah, I absolutely love it. But
the other thing is, so I'll put it this way, Richard. I've never seen the end of Halloween 3 all the way through, because there comes a point with that commercial where it just goes on too long, and I'm like, I'm just going to wait it out. I'm just not going to look, and then I have to turn it off. I can't do it. And then basically Eli Roth films, anything that's gross for the sake of being gross, I'm all set. I saw Hostel in the theater with my brother, and that was an experience. But, you know, like, I'm all set with the Green Inferno. I don't want to watch, you know, I'm not going to watch a movie that's literal torture porn. I will defend the Saw movies from here to next week, because the original few, like the first two, you can get three, maybe four if you push your luck. But the new one especially, I don't see these as just plotless, brutal films, because there's actually something going on there. And yeah, they're gross. That's not something most people like watching. But a film where it's literally just intended to make you squirm, I'm good.
I disagree, Lisa. I don't think Hostel is there just to make you squirm. And I think those movies are significantly better than any of the Saw movies.
Oh, you and I are going to have to have a fight then.
Because that movie is
literally about people torturing other people and getting enjoyment from
it. That's not what Saw is. About how Americans see foreigners. And he's doing a whole satire about that on the Hostel movies.
I'm going to take your word for it, because I saw the first one. I will not be seeing anything else. I saw the first Human Centipede. I will not be seeing anything else. It's just not for me. Like, Jigsaw as a killer gives you the opportunity to survive. And I think there's something interesting there, as opposed to Eli Roth's killers, who are just going to brutalize you because they enjoy it. I'm good.
I find that to be just more scarier, that you have these normal people have the ability to do these horrific things because they're rich and can get away with it. I found that to be much more of a...
Definitely unnerving. Don't need to see it. I can understand without watching it.
Dave, how about you? Have you got an untouchable taboo?
Yeah, for me, it's definitely torture porn. And by that, I mean any movie that exists to exploit the slow deaths of characters who don't have it coming. So I agree that I don't think the Saw movies are torture porn. I think they're stories of poetic justice, at least... you know, the first few. Or worse yet, I've seen some movies where sleazoid directors, you know, they show the real killing of animals for the sake of entertainment.
Yeah,
a lot of those movies oozed out of Italy and Asia in the 80s, and yeah, that's a hard pass for me.
Understood.
Hmm?
Vern, yes. I know that your answer to this question is going to be different than everybody else's.
Not really. I will watch anything.
That's what that's what I'm saying.
I've seen Human Centipede, and I was surprised by the fact that it doesn't show a lot of like gory things, a lot of it.
It's also the most anticlimactic thing ever. It was actually kind of boring, that movie.
Very much like, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It doesn't show anything, but I agree, it's kind of anticlimactic. I will not watch the second one just because it goes into very extreme themes that I really just don't want to see. Same thing with the Serbian film. I'm never gonna watch that. I will watch reviews about that movie. Here the Kingdom Come, not going to watch it. I did watch one recently that I thought I would never watch, and it was okay, but I still don't want to recommend it to people, and that's Necronomicon. Or no, Necromantic, sorry. Necromantic. Because there are some animal cruelty, and like that just does not need to be in there. Any movie that has any like real animal abuse or anything like that, then I just want to like just not watch that stuff at all. So I do have my limits of movies, but torture porn, yes, sure, I'll watch that. Depends on what the structure of the movie is. If it's just there just for nothing else, I don't care about it. But yeah, I'm pretty open. But yeah, Human Centipede 2, not watching that.
I got to tell you, you know, I'm going to be the echo of most of you on this particular one. I thought Vern would have watched Serbian film and been talking about it. I'm glad to know that there are some limits for you. I know that I could not take this film. I would not do it. And The Human Centipede and Hostel are two of the films I'm thinking about. You know, torture porn is just not something that I think I can appreciate. I'm sure that there's something there that people give a damn about, but I don't know what it is.
More to Hostel than being torture porn.
And
people need to get away from that. I need to start.
Yeah, but I got to get through the torture to get to whatever, you know, satire it is that you were talking about, you know, concerning our paranoia about foreigners. And by the way, there's just too much in the world. We were talking about this earlier. There's too much in the world that is really terrible that, you know, I don't think I need to see anything that comes close to, you know, that in the real world. I gotta be able to live with it as being a fantasy, you know, something that is, you know, I gotta be able to roll over and go to sleep.
Richard, you're talking to someone that used to watch Requiem for a Dream before he went to sleep at night.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. You know, I saw that once, and that was a nightmare also, but I wouldn't put it, although some people might define it as a horror film, I wouldn't put it in any of the genres that we've talked about. But
I wouldn't either. But yeah, definitely an intense film.
You know, just like Jaws doesn't belong in that category.
See, Jaws scares me more than Hostel. I still get freaked out.
Yeah, being scared is not necessarily the thing that's problematic. It's being disturbed and disgusted psychically depressed. Yeah, that's the kind of stuff that I can't really put up with. You know, it's a
see,
little.
See, I love that. Give me to feel disturbed and freaked out and
For you, Vern.
The candy.
It's all for you, Vern. It's all for you.
I love that.
That's such a great moment. I love that moment.
All right. Well, we've finished up our show here. That's the exit question of the week. I do want to give people a chance to promote whatever they've got going. And one of the things that I do need to mention is that Nicole has promoted a movie for the movie of the month in November. Nicole, you get a chance here to kind of convince people to vote for your movie.
Oh, Richard, I'm so glad that you reminded me of that, because I had a horror movie marathon in mind to promote for this. But yes, Middle of Nowhere, directed by Ava DuVernay. It was one of her earlier films. And I put it up just because the holidays is, you know, are approaching, and the film is about a woman whose husband is in prison, and she has a hard time, I guess, dealing with that. And there are some revelations that take place in this film that I guess send her on a journey of like discovery. And when that movie came out, I remember going to some festivals and a discussion about how we get to see a lot of films with like people in jail or what have you. There are a lot of them for whatever reason. But we rarely do we get to see the impact that it has on their families. And I just thought that it was it's an interesting film, and it's one that I've been wanting to rewatch just for myself, because the woman is under, I guess, stress and pressure, but you don't see that because she's very reserved and she has a little outburst. There's a scene where she has like an outburst, and it still doesn't even scratch the surface of, I guess, of what she's dealing with. And I've been feeling like that lately. And so just for personally, I've just been wanting to watch it just for therapeutic purposes or what have you. I could probably listen to some rock music or some music, but I wanted to rewatch it just to understand what, you know, like what she's going through, because a lot of people can like talk to you or give you solutions to whatever problems they think you have, but if they're not experiencing it themselves, and also if the person who's dealing with the stress isn't asking for help or isn't talking to someone, then that can take a toll. So that's why I champion Middle of Nowhere, because this is a time, going into the holidays, it's a time when a lot of families tend to get together, but then there are people who either may not have access to their family, or people that might not have any friends, maybe, I don't know. But this particular lady, it's just her, and her husband's in jail, and her only other social outlet is like her mother, who seems very judgmental, but the mother's coming from a concerned place, but it doesn't come off. The mother's concerned, and you know, she has a right to be, and it's understandable, but the mother's disposition and how she talks to her daughter could, you know, be improved, maybe.
Well, so we'll explore all of that if that film actually wins. There is, however, we have three films that were put up for Movie of the Month, and two people who've championed films are on today's episode. So we've heard from Nicole. Lisa, do you have a reason that you want to talk about the film that you suggested?
Sure. So I am championing, words are hard today, 2006 The Fall, which is a visually stunning, beautiful story about a stuntman who is stuck in a hospital, and this little girl keeps showing up, and he decides to tell her a story about five heroes. And this incredible film is such a trip to just watch and to see what it's about and what it looks like, the transitions, the vibrant colors. This is Tarsem Singh, who also directed the film The Cell. So if you remember the visuals in that particular film, you're going to get something even more incredible in this particular film. So that's the one I am championing. Nice. Why can't I say this today?
It's a tough word.
This is one of my buddy's like favorite films of all time.
Oh, I saw this in time. Yeah, I saw this very shortly. Probably in the early 2010s, I saw this one for the first time, and I couldn't believe it had gotten by me. It's just absolutely magnificent to look at, and it's just one of my favorites. So I figured, you know what? Let's throw this one out there.
I liked it.
Well, Bubba Wheat's going to be sorry that he wasn't on this week's show because he doesn't get a chance to offer his support for his particular suggestion. We've got two suggestions there. Hopefully, everybody listening here will find one that they want to hear us talk about and make sure to vote for it on the website. Other things that people would like to promote, we'll give you a quick chance to do this. Vern, what have you got that you want to promote?
All right, well, over on Cinema Recall, cinemarecall.net, we recently interviewed the directors behind Murder Size, Paul Ritzdell and Angelica D'Alba. Really great watch. You can watch Murder Size on Tubi. It's a fun sexploitation horror film. And then we also recently interviewed Daniel Abella. He's the main event coordinator of a Philip K. Dick Film Festival happening in London and a psychedelic film festival happening in New York. And then we did episodes recently with Jason Soto of Rabbit Hole Podcast, which Lisa is part of that network as well. And then I did an episode with Ashley about her time at Universal's Horror Nights and my top films of 2023 so far.
Good deal. Dave, have you got something that you want us to turn our attention to?
Yeah, I got some reviews of some new physical releases coming out this week on Blu-ray and 4K of Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, and Blue Beetle. And then in November, I'm putting together my annual holiday gift guide of physical media.
Oh, nice.
Have you signed up for the Christmas gift show?
Not yet. If there's a spot open, why don't you put me in there?
I will do so, because this sounds exactly like the kind of thing that we're going to be doing on that show.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nicole, you did already promote the movie that you're suggesting for Movie of the Month. Do you have something else that you want us to look at?
Yes, I do. So in the twist on Blogtober, I am attempting to publish several blog posts with interviews from various indie film directors, including some horror movie directors with horror films that are available online right now and films that are premiering at film festivals as we speak. Those directors will be answering 13 questions in a little spook fest, and those questions are focused on everything magical, spooky, scary, creepy, crawly things that go bump in the night to celebrate Halloween. So I'm planning to publish all of those in a blogathon all day Tuesday on Halloween, October 31st.
Very nice. Lisa, I know that you've promoted the movie that you've put up for Movie of the Month. Do you have podcasts or something else that you want us to see?
Sure. You can catch me on the Rabbit Hole Podcast Network. Like Vern has already said, I'm on a show called Between the Scares, on which Jason Soto and I are working our way through every film that Jason Blum and Blumhouse Productions have put out into the world. Our next episode, we will be covering both the original film and the reboot / remake of The Town That Dreaded Sundown. So look for that on Spotify or where you find your favorite podcast episodes in the next coming week or so.
I haven't neglected anybody, have I? Everybody's gotten a chance to plug something here at the end. Good deal. Because sometimes I forget. You know?
You're good.
Yeah. Well, you know, all work and no play makes Richard a forgetful boy. And on my site, just the usual things. If I've seen it in a theater, you'll read about it on the blog page. And recently I saw a lot of horror films that were covered in the Panic at the Paramount, which is the series that they did at the Paramount Theater here in Austin. So there is a review up of It Follows, which was a great experience. Also, we had X and Pearl as a double feature, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. There were a whole bunch of these. Oh, Wreck and A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. So if you are interested in horror films this month on Kirkham A Movie A Day, there's a whole variety of horror films that you can kind of get my opinion about. I'm spoiler free, but you know, sometimes we have to share some information that would make the story make sense, but nothing that's going to ruin it for anybody. I hate when that happens.
Richard, Pearl almost made my list of slashers. Almost, so close.
I love both those films. I can't wait for Maxine. I just, you know, that's going to be my most anticipated film, even over Dune 2 next year. Even if there was a James Bond film coming out, I think Maxine might be high on the list. It's just one of those things totally I'm really looking forward to. All right, well, it's Halloween time, everybody. I guess everyone's entitled to one good scare. I want to thank you all for joining us this week. You know, it's nobody wants to see vampire killers anymore or vampires. Apparently all they want to see are demented madmen running around in ski masks, hacking up young virgins. I'm okay with that. So come and play with us forever and ever, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye, everybody.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
You've been listening to the Lambcast. If you have an idea for a show or would like to join us on the Lambcast, contact us at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Find us on Facebook, just search for Lambcast, or on Twitter, at Lambcast. The Lamb site can be found at largeassmovieblogs.com, and please head over to iTunes to leave us a review.
Go to hell.
Ha 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 ha!